I mentioned I'm going to give a sermon that I have given in the past, and I apologize for that, but I really think it's at least hopefully helpful as far as the sermon that I have been working on for next Sabbath. That I think this is good background. I feel like it's necessary background for what I do hope to cover next Sabbath, since I do have an opportunity to speak 2 weeks in a row. So I do beg your indulgence. I remember vividly when Mr. Armstrong started a series of sermons. I really don't know how long he spoke on it, but on the two trees. It seemed like it was a year or 2 years or whatever, and primarily covered two verses. He'd get up one Sabbath and he'd cover those two verses. He'd get up the next Sabbath and he'd cover those two verses. He'd get up the next Sabbath and he'd cover those two verses. And finally somebody said, well, why don't you speak on something else? And he said, well, when you learn these two verses, I'll go to the next two. Well, I certainly don't mean that at all in this sermon, but I do, like I said, think it's necessary that at least we refresh our memory. I will apologize ahead of time for all of the reading that I will be doing, but again, I think that's necessary because I know very, very little about sheep, and I'm not going to give you my experience, but rather other people's experience. Turn to Psalm 23 and verse 1. Certainly one of the most favorite and most well-known passages in the entire Bible. As a matter of fact, it was the hymn that our song leader started out with today, the 23rd Psalm. It says the Psalm of David. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He feedeth me beside the He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Today I want to basically dissect this and talk about our great and living shepherd and what he does for us and how that he interacts with our lives and help us to see perhaps things in a different light than we have seen before, especially in light of the sermon that I have prepared for next week. I mentioned previously when I gave this sermon that I did the research and I used three books. I actually brought those books with me at the time, I do believe. The first one was A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23 by Philip Keller. A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. The second one is also by Philip Keller. It's entitled A Shepherd Looks at the Good Shepherd and His Sheep. And then the third one is The Song of Our Syrian Guest by William Allen Knight. Verse 1 and 2, I'm going to basically just say a very few comments about, because I hope to cover that in pretty good detail next week. But I did want to read to you, it says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." Tremendous amount is covered here in a very short, concise, precise terms. From the book entitled A Song of Our Syrian Guest, it says, "He was a man of winsome mind, this Syrian guest of ours. And the spirituality of his culture was as marked as the refinement of his manner. We shall long remember him for the tales that he told that evening of his home on the slopes of the Syrian mountains, but longest of all for what he said out of the memories of his youth about a shepherd's song." He said, quote, "It was out of the shepherd's life of my country," he remarked, "that there came long ago that sweetest religious song ever written, the 23rd Psalm." He smiled pleasantly, and then with earnestness he said, "So many things in the life of my people, the same now as in the days of old, have been woven into the words of the Bible and into the religious ideas expressed there. You of the Western world, not knowing these things as they are, often misunderstand what is written, or at least fail to get correct impression from it. For it is all a simple shepherd's psalm," he began. "See how it runs through the rounds of the shepherd's life from the first word to the last. And with a softly modulated voice, that had a rhythm of music and a hush of veneration in it, he quoted, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." There is the opening strain of the music. In that chord sounded the keynote, which is never lost until the plaintive melody dies away at the song's end. All that follows is that thoroughly put in varying light. So here in verse 1, we find that he establishes who the shepherd is, who the owner is, who owns the flock. Obviously, David was a shepherd. He was the son of a shepherd. He was referring to who we know as Jesus Christ, the Lord, his shepherd and his master. When Christ was here among mankind, he declared infinitely, he said, "I am the good shepherd," and truly he was the good shepherd. Christ is forever looking out for our good, for our benefit, for our best interest, for our welfare. He's ever working on our behalf to ensure that we will benefit from his care. And you know, we have to then depend upon him. We have to realize that we truly do belong to him. And I hope to cover that in pretty good detail next Sabbath. We can ask questions like, have we truly surrendered ourselves completely to him? Do we respond to him? Do we submit to him? Do we yield to his ownership? And so forth. Then the next part of this verse, the second point, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." And again, I'll cover this in detail next Sabbath, these first two points. I shall not want, no matter what you have to go through, no matter what trials or tests or problems or inflictions that life brings your way, can you truly say, "I shall not want"? David said this actually from a viewpoint of a sheep, not from a viewpoint of a shepherd, but that he as a sheep and the flock being managed by Jesus Christ was totally, utterly satisfied with his lot in life, with what the owner did for him, and he was perfectly satisfied with his master, perfectly content with his lot in life. From a shepherd looks at Psalm 23, by Philip Keller, it says, "When he, Christ, was among us, the great shepherd himself warned his disciples before his departure for glory that in this world you shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world." And one of the fallacies that is common among Christians today is the assertion that if a man or woman is prospering materially, it is a significant mark of the blessings of God upon their life. This simply is not so. Rather, in bold contrast, we read in Revelation 3 and verse 17, quote, "Because you sayeth, I'm rich and increased with goods, and have need of nothing, and knowest not that you're wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked." And so David, of course, went beyond just the physical circumstances that he was going through one way or the other. Because when all is said and done, the welfare of any flock is entirely dependent upon the management afforded to them by their owner, by the shepherd that's over them. Point number three. Now we get into more of the meat of the sermon today, because like I said, next week I want to cover those two aspects in pretty good detail. "He maketh me to lie down in green pastures." Here we have a beautiful, placid, wonderful picture. It sounds like of peace and contentment. We can just see the sheep and the lambs laying down out in this wonderful pasture. In the book, a shepherd looks at Psalm 23. It says, "The strange thing about sheep is that because of their very makeup, it is almost impossible for them to be made to lie down unless four requirements are met. Owing to their timidity, they refuse to lay down unless they are, number one, free of fear. Number two, because of the social behavior within the flock, sheep do not lie down unless they are free from friction with others of their kind. Number three, if tormented by flies or parasites, sheep will not lay down. Only when they are free from these pests can they relax. And fourth, lastly, sheep will not lay down as long as they feel in need of finding food. They must be free of hunger." So here we find a very, like I said, peaceful, placid picture, contentment of being free from fear, from being free from tension and aggression, and hostility and hunger, this type of thing. So the owner, the shepherd, has to make sure that the flock is free from all of these distracting influences so they will lay down at peace and comfort. And when we examine these four factors that affect the sheep, we realize what an important part then that the shepherd, the owner, the manager, does play in the management of sheep. He is the one that makes it possible for the sheep to be content. He has to take them to pastures to make sure that they have enough food. It's his responsibility, as we'll see later, to make sure that they're free of pests and infections and this type of thing, that there's no contention among them and so forth, so that they will have peace, that they can lay down, that they can rest, and that they can be content and quiet and flourishing. A flock that's always irritated, that's restless, that's discontented, always agitated and disturbed, never does well. They don't lamb very well. They lose the fetuses. And you know, it's a lot the same with humans. If we're constantly upset one with another, if there's not contentment, if there's not peace and happiness where we can just sit down and relax and be ourselves one with another, if we feel like we're judging each other and this type of thing, then that's certainly not the way that Christ wants it. A shepherd looks at Psalm 23 again. It says, "It is not generally known that sheep are so timid and easily panicked that even a stray jackrabbit suddenly bounding from behind a bush can stampede a whole flock. When one startled sheep runs in fright, a dozen others will bolt with blind fear, not even knowing or waiting to see what frightened the other one." And he talked about how a friend visited his ranch, and they had this little tiny Pekingese. And he wrote, "As she opened the car door, the pup jumped out on the grass, and just one glimpse of the unexpected little dog was enough. In sheer terror, over 200 of my sheep, which were resting nearby, leaped up and rushed off the pasture. As long as there is even the slightest suspicion of danger from dogs, coyotes, cougars, bears, or other enemies, the sheep will stand ready to flee for their lives. They have no means of self-defense. They are helpless, timid, feeble creatures whose only recourse basically is to run. Ewes, who are heavy with lamb, when chased by dogs or other predators, will slip their unborn lambs and lose them in abortions. A shepherd's loss from such forays can be appalling. One morning at dawn, I found 9 of my choicest ewes, all soon to lamb, lying dead in the field where a cougar had raided the flock during the night. In the course of time, I came to realize that nothing so quieted and reassured the sheep as to see me in the field. The presence of their master and their owner and protector put them at ease as nothing else could do day and night. He maketh me to lie down. In the Christian life, there is no substitute for the keen awareness that my shepherd is nearby." Because life is uncertain. Many times we do have the cougars and the bears, as it were, in our life that attack us. We certainly know, as was brought out in the sermonette, about a Benedict Arnold that rebelled against God, and that Lucifer, Satan, is a roaring lion that goes about to destroy us. And life is difficult. Seems like we faced dangers and problems from every direction in our life. Life is difficult. It's hard. It's full of hazards. It seems like no matter where we go, there's pitfalls and this and that type of thing. We live in a society of anxiety and fear and foreboding and even panic sometimes, that we live in a sense very seldom of contentment, of rest, no matter what comes along and what comes our way, knowing that we're being watched over and protected and guarded over by the chief shepherd. "He maketh me to lie down in green pastures," because green pastures don't just happen. I think those of you that have a garden, those of you that have a farm, those of you that have pasture land, realize that you can't just, quote, let it grow, end quote, and that's the end of it. If you do, I mean, you're making a big mistake. They are products of tremendous labor, of time and skill and effort in land use to be able to keep them that way. You have to clear the rough, rocky land. You have to get the rocks out. You have to get the weeds out. You have to clear the brush and the stumps and the roots and all these things. You have to plow it and seed it and plant it and fertilize it. You know, it's a lot of work, and sometimes even watering it. It takes a lot of work, care, time, energy, and effort. God works hard to clear the rocks and the stones and the trash out of our lives. He has to dig down sometimes pretty deep to get those roots out of our lives. It might be hard when we're going through it, but the end result is good, and we're more productive as a result. In Romans 8 and verse 18, it says, "For I consider that the suffering of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly awaits for the revealing of the sons of God." Brethren, do you deeply know that Christ is in charge of your life? That He is the master that is over your life? That He truly is the chief shepherd? That no matter what you go through, no matter what you face, that you can face it with faith and with assurance, knowing then, as Romans 8 and verse 28 says, "For I consider that the suffering of this present time are not worthy to be compared with your glory, which shall be revealed in us, for the earnest expectation is waiting for the revelation or the revealing of the sons of God." Are you like David when he said in Psalm 3 and verse 34, "When you lie down, you will not be afraid. Yes, you will lay down and your sleep will be sweet. Do not be afraid of sudden terror, nor of trouble from the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught." I think that's beautiful. And again, understanding how sheep are, and understanding that David was a shepherd, and he knew how important it was that the sheep be content, that they be able to lay down in a sense of security, in a sense of well-being, and not be frustrated and angry and worried and frustrated and all of these things. Point number four, Psalm 23 and verse 2. "He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters." From the song of our Syrian guest, it says, "He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. Nourishment and rest is pictured. He leadeth me beside the still waters." The scene changes, and so does the meaning. You think here of a quietly flowing stream, so you get more picture of the rest. But you miss out on one of the finest scenes in a shepherd's life and one of the rarest blessings of an individual that is led by God. All through the day's roamings, the shepherd keeps one thing in mind. He must lead his flock to a drinking place. The refreshment of good water marks the coveted hour of all of the day, when the spot where it is found amidst the rough and waterless hills and plains is the crowning token of the shepherd's unfailing thoughtfulness. When at last the sheep are led, quote, "beside the still waters," how good it is after the dust and heat of the day of the sheep's walk. But what would a shepherd mean by these words, "He leadeth me beside the still waters"? You know of rivers and brooks in the Holy Land, for their names are read many times in the Bible. But you do not know how the rivers are far from each other through the rough country. And you probably do not know how many of the brooks are called wadis by us, because they're only ravines that run dry when the rainy season ends. Job says, "My brethren have dealt deceitfully as a brook and as a channel of brooks that pass away." In the region where David was a shepherd, living streams are scarce indeed. For Judean borders on the south country called the Negev, and it means the dry. Even in other parts where the lasting streams are, how often the shepherd finds them in gullies between broken hills, and how often the banks are too dangerous for the sheep and they flow is too rough. The sheep are timid and they fear this current of water, as they may well, for they are easily carried downstream because of their wool. If a sheep falls into a flowing stream, they can drown quite easily. They're very buoyant, but they have, you know, the little legs. They can't really swim. They can't pull themselves out, and they're just swept away because of this fur. It just, you know, and then finally, of course, they get waterlogged, and they drown. The key here is that the shepherd obtains water. He knows where the best drinking places are and where the safest waters are. He knows where the purest and the cleanest waters are, that are free from poison, free from parasites, and so forth. Like humans, sheep are comprised of about 70% water. So replenishment of that water is vital to maintaining a good, healthy flock. If they don't get it, of course, they eventually die. A lack of water causes severe dehydration, of the tissues and causes severe damage to the sheep. When sheep are thirsty, they become restless and they set out in search of water to satisfy their own thirst. And if not led to good water supplies of clean and pure water, they'll often wind up drinking from polluted potholes where they pick up internal parasites like nematoids and liver flukes and other diseases and germs because they weren't led to the good water. Christ said in Matthew 5 and verse 6, "Blessed are they who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be filled." Because he's the one that provides the good, clean, pure, wholesome water for us. You know, Christ said in John, the 4th chapter and verse 10, said, "Jesus said unto her, If you knew the gift of God and who it was that said unto you, Give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living waters. And the woman said unto him, Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you get these living waters? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us this well and drank from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock?" And Jesus answered and said unto her, "Whoever drinks of this water will never thirst again. Whoever drinks of this water," talking about the well there, "will thirst again, but whosoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. But the water that I give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life." Brethren, do we literally drink in of Christ? How deeply do we hunger and thirst after him and after his righteousness and after his holiness and the way that he lived his life? You know, only God can satisfy that deep craving and hunger that you have. Betty and I both have been on a diet. It's called the Birmingham diet. I don't necessarily recommend it. You starve to death basically for 3 days, and then you eat for four. And of course, if you overeat on the four, then you've undone all your starvation on the three. But I'll tell you, so many nights I'd go to bed, and because we do the diet the first 3 days are Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And so many nights I'd go to bed, and my stomach just be, you know, gnawing and saying, "Give me something to eat. I'm hungry." And I wonder how often we really hunger and really thirst after the righteousness of Jesus Christ and of God. Because only God can truly satisfy that deep hunger that we have that goes beyond just eating a steak or having a hamburger or anything like that. But we hunger for that deep water that God gives to us, that pure and healing water. So many people's lives are truly empty. They're just desolate. There's nothing there. They're dried up and they're parched and they're barren. They're producing virtually nothing. And a person can never be satisfied with a substitute. Only the Spirit and the life of Christ himself will satisfy that deep thirst and that hunger that's inside of a human being. In Jeremiah 2 and verse 12, it says, "Be astonished, O heavens, at this, and be horribly afraid, and be very desolate." Jeremiah 2 and verse 12 says, "The Lord, for my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewn for themselves broken cisterns that cannot hold water." And it truly is impossible to have good, prosperous life apart from God. We've got to have that water of his Holy Spirit living in us to truly be satisfied. Again, from a shepherd looks at Psalm 23. It says, "I recall so clearly standing under the blazing equatorial suns of Africa and watching the native herds being led by their owners to their owner's water well. Some of these were enormous, hand-hewed caverns cut from the sandstone with ramps running down to the water. The herds and the flocks were led down into these deep cisterns where cool, clear, clean water awaited them. But down in the well, stripped naked, was the owner bailing water to satisfy the flock. It was hard, heavy, hot work. Perspiration poured off of the body of the bailer, whose skin just glistened under the strain and the heat of his labor. As I stood there watching the animals quench their thirst at the still waters, I was again immensely impressed by the fact that everything hinged and depended upon the diligence of the owner, the shepherd. Only through his energy, his efforts, his sweat, his strength, could the sheep be satisfied. In the Christian life, exactly the same applies. Many of the places that we may be led will appear to us as dark, deep, and dangerous, and steep, and somewhat disagreeable. But it simply must be remembered that it is His energy, effort, and strength expended on my behalf that even in this deep, dark place is bound to produce a benefit for me. It is there that I will discover that only He can satisfy me. Surely life starts to have then significance. I discover that I am the object of His special care and attention. From the book, The Song of My Syrian Guest, it says, "Up in the mountainsides of Lebanon, where my kinsmen have long been shepherds, often there are no regular drinking places such as wells and fountains of the plains. But as a shepherd leads his sheep over the rough slopes, he finds many a spring and sees the rivulets noisily running down the crevasse. His sheep need water. They cannot drink from the leaping little stream. What does he do? He finds a suitable turn or nook in its course, and he walls it up into a little dam that holds the water till it forms a quiet pool. And then right there on the open hill, he leads his sheep beside the still waters, which the shepherd's own hand has stilled. I know of nothing more fit to picture the shepherd's care of souls that trust him more than that scene up there in the mountainside." You know, in Revelation, the 7th chapter, it says, "They shall neither hunger anymore nor thirst anymore. The sun shall not strike them, nor any heat. For the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne will shepherd them and lead them to the living fountains of waters. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes." Point number 5, Psalm 23 and verse 3. "He restoreth my soul." Again from the Song of My Syrian Guest. "He restoreth my soul, you know," he said, turning to me. That soul means a life or one's own self in the Hebrew writings, and of course that's true. Then addresses us all, he went on. He said, "And there are perilous places for the sheep on all sides, and they seem to never learn to avoid them. The shepherd must ever be on the watch. And there are private fields and sometimes gardens and vineyards where the shepherd has to watch, because if they wander off into those, then they automatically become the property of that landowner. So if a sheep strays there and they're caught, then the sheep is forfeited to the owner of the land. He restoreth my soul means the shepherd brings me back and rescues me from fatal and forbidden places. Restores me when wandering." David that wrote this psalm, of course, knew what troubles were. He had all kinds of problems and woes and worries and frustrations. You can read through the book of Psalms and see that over and over and over. He certainly knew what it meant to be discouraged. He knew what it meant to have trials and tests, to be cast down and despondent. He said in Psalm 42 in verse 9, "I will say to the God of my rock, why have you forsaken me? Why do I go mourning because of the oppression of my enemies? As with the breaking of my bones, my enemies reproach me. And while they say to me all day long, where is your God? And why are you cast down, O my soul? And why are you disquieted within me? Hope in God, for I shall yet praise Him, the help of my countenance and my God." And a shepherd looks at Psalm 23. He said there is an exact parallel to this in caring for sheep. Only those intimately acquainted with sheep and their habits understand the significance of a, quote, cast, C-A-S-T, sheep, or a cast-down sheep. This is an old English shepherd's term for a sheep that has turned over on its back and cannot get up again by itself. A cast sheep is a very pathetic sight, lying on its back with its feet up in the air. Sort of like a turtle. You know, you can turn a turtle on or a tortoise on his back, and most of the time they cannot turn themselves over. They can occasionally kick enough to where they'll wind up turning over, but most of the time they can't. He points out that the owner, if the owner doesn't arrive in time, that a cast sheep can actually and will die if they're left too long. Says the shepherd has to constantly watch his flock. And if one of the sheep is cast somewhere, he's got to go search for it, he's got to find it, and then set it on his feet again, or it's sure death for the sheep. When a sheep is cast, it is extremely vulnerable. it's easy prey for any predators, and as he brings out, death is not very far off at all at that point. And of course, we ask ourselves, when does Satan attack us the most? When we're cast, when we're cast down, when we're discouraged, when we're despondent, when, you know, woe is me, and we feel like we just can't get up, so to speak, when you're down and out. So when you're cast down, any shepherd knows that any sheep that is cast is helpless, that they're vulnerable, and they realize it's a very, very serious problem and that they have to take care of the problem immediately. Some sheep are worse than others about it. Some sheep, just seems like, as he brings out in his book, or constantly, he used the example of one of them that would just seem like every few days wound up, quote, being cast, end quote. Even the strongest and healthiest sheep can become cast. The fattest ones, as a matter of fact, sometimes they're the ones that it happens to the most. Generally, the fattest sheep with the most wool are the ones that have a problem. He says, quote, "The way it happens is this. A heavy, fat, or long fleece sheep will lie down comfortably in some little hollow or depression in the ground. It may roll on its side slightly to stretch or to relax. Suddenly, the center of gravity in the body shifts so that it turns on its back enough that its feet no longer touch the ground. It may feel a sense of panic and start to paw frantically. Frequently, this only makes things worse and it rolls over even further. Now it's quite impossible for it to regain its feet. It lies there struggling. Gases begin to build up in the rumen, and these expand and tend to retard and cut off blood circulation to extremities of the body, especially to the legs. And if the weather is very hot and sunny, a cast sheep can die within just a few hours. If it's cool and cloudy and rainy, it may survive in this position for several days." You know, sometimes you can seem to be at your strongest and at your absolute best in the bunch, so to speak, but you can become cast down, and the Good Shepherd has to come to our rescue and must come and rescue us and get us back on our feet and get our minds back where it needs to be. Our Shepherd watches us. He restores us when we get down. He comes and He picks us up and makes sure that we are okay. He sets us right back on our feet, because just like the sheep, if we stay down and out too long, then, of course, we can die spiritually as well as physically. He says, "If a sheep has been down for a long time, the shepherd has to lift it to its feet and straddle it and hold it up and rub its legs to help restore circulations." And man, how many times has God picked us up, rubbed our feet and our legs, so to speak, and get us back on the right path? From the song of my Syrian guest, it says, "He restoreth my soul, you know. He said, turning to me, that the soul means the life, or one's own self in the Hebrew writings. There are perilous places." There are perilous places for the sheep on all sides. I guess I read that, pardon me. But he mentioned in Isaiah 53 and verse 6, that all we like sheep have gone astray, and we have turned every one to his own way. And that is so true, that we go wandering off, we wind up cast, as it were, on our back, with our feet up in the air, and we just can't seem to make it. Point number 6, verse 3. "He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake." Sheep are notorious creatures of habit. Every book that I read regarding this mentions that sheep are very habitual, that they do the same thing, they'll go the same trails, go the same places, same watering holes, this over and over and over. And if left to themselves, they will follow the same trails until they become ruts. They'll graze the same identical hills until they wind up as desert wastes. They'll pollute their own ground until it's filled with disease and all types of parasites. Many of the world's finest sheep ranges have been ruined, literally beyond repair, by overgrazing, by poor management, because the shepherd did not know what he was doing, or because of indifference or ignorance to the sheep owner. Philip Keller said, "A commonly held but serious misconception about sheep is they can, quote, just get along anywhere, end quote. The truth is quite the reverse. No other class of livestock requires more careful handling, more detailed direction than do sheep. No doubt David, as a shepherd himself, had learned this firsthand from tough experience. He knew beyond dispute that if his flock was to flourish and the owner's reputation was to be held in high esteem as a good manager, the sheep had to constantly be under his meticulous control and guidance. The first sheep farm that I purchased as a young man was a place of derelict land which had been sheep to death, quote unquote. An absentee owner had rented the place to a tenant. The tenant simply loaded the ranch with sheep, then left them pretty much on their own way. The result was disastrous. Fields became overgrazed and impoverished, as they would grow very little but poverty grass. Little sheep trails had deteriorated into great gullies. Erosion on the slopes was rampant, and the whole place was ravaged almost beyond repair. All of this happened simply because the sheep, instead of being managed and handled with intelligent care, had been left to struggle for themselves, left to go their own way, left to the whims of their own destructive habits. Because of the behavior of the sheep and their preference for certain favored spots, these well-worn areas quickly became infected with parasites of all kinds. In a short time, the whole flock can thus become infected with worms, nematoids, and scab. And he goes on to point out that an intelligent shepherd, of course, realizes this destructive nature that sheep have. Just like we as human beings so often, we have a destructive nature as well. That our own human nature is a downward pull, and we wind up with all types of problems. And the shepherd has to take appropriate steps to avoid that situation. He keeps his flock on the move and not let them stay in the same pasture too long. He prevents overgrazing, and he cuts down on the parasites and the diseases as a result. Sheep droppings, they say, are the richest of all of the livestock. In the Middle East, sheep are known as the animals with, quote, the golden hooves because of their droppings being so rich and they enrich the soil and the pasture so much. So if they left to themselves, they bring destruction. They wind up destroying it. They wind up eating all the way down to the roots, and many times they'll even, because they don't have enough to eat, pull the roots out and eat those. But under proper management, then they can bring productivity and actually make a field better than when they came in and fed on it. So if left to themselves, they bring destruction, but under proper management, they bring productivity. God has called you to be productive, to leave something behind that's good when you pass through, to be a reflection of your master, that when you go through an area, so to speak, that you leave something good that reflected that Jesus Christ truly is the shepherd over your life. Philip Keller writes about moving the sheep to different pastures, and he says, "In this following of a precise plan of operations lies the secret of healthy flocks and healthy land. Here is the key to successful sheep husbandry. Casting my mind's eye back over the years that I have kept sheep, no other single aspect of the ranch operations commanded more of my careful attention than this of moving the sheep. It literally dominated all of my decisions. Not a day went by but when I would walk over the pasture in which the sheep were feeding to observe the balance between its growth and the grazing pressure on it. As soon as the point was reached where I felt maximum benefit for both sheep and land was not being met, the sheep were moved to a fresh field. On the average, this meant that they were put into new ground almost every week. A point worthy to mention here is that whenever the shepherd opens a gate and to fresh pastures, the sheep are filled with excitement. As they go through the gate, even the sated old ewes will often kick up their heels and leap with delight at the prospect of finding fresh food. How they enjoy being led into new ground. Now as we turn to the human aspect of this theme, we will be astonished at some of the parallels. It's no mere whim on God's part to call us sheep. Our behavior patterns and life habits are so much like that of sheep, it is well nigh embarrassing. First of all, Scripture points out that most of us are stiff-necked and a stubborn lot. Of course, that's not you. That's talking about me and some others in the room, but obviously not you. We prefer to follow our own fancies and to turn our own ways. We are like sheep having gone astray. We have turned every side to his own way, in Isaiah 53 and verse 6. And this we do deliberately, repeatedly, even to our own disadvantage. There is something almost terrifying about the destructive self-determination of a human being. It is inexorably interlocked with personal pride and self-assertion. We insist that we know when it is best for us and what is best for us, even though the disastrous results may be self-evident. Just as sheep will blindly, habitually, stupidly follow one another along the same little trails until they become ruts and a road into gigantic gullies, so we humans cling to the same habits that we have seen ruin other people's lives. Turning to my own way simply means doing what I want. It implies that I feel free to assert my own wishes, to carry out my own ideas, and this I do in spite of every warning. We read in Proverbs 14 and verse 12 and Proverbs 16 and verse 25, "There is a way which seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death." You know, Christ, the chief shepherd, says, "I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life, and no man comes unto the Father but by me. I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly." Christ truly is the true shepherd that leads us into the wonderful paths of righteousness, that leads us in the direction that he wants. Point number 7, verse 4. "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me." Both in Palestine and in the western U.S., the pasturing is split into two divisions. We even practice this here in the United States. Long treks into the distant high country in the summer where the sheep enjoy the solitary company of the shepherd. With the approach of autumn and winter, then they bring the sheep down and they move the sheep back to the protective home ranch, moving from one range to another to make sure that it's not overextended. Many times there's long drives of the sheep in between. I'm going to tell on Betty. My wife used to receive letters from Brent Curtis. He was a man that was in college with us, and he was a shepherd. And he would go off in the summer and go up to the highland plains that they had and take the sheep. And many times he'd be gone for 2 or 3 months and have no contact with anybody. He'd be up there with just he and the sheep. And he would watch over them and so forth. And during this time, the flock is alone with the shepherd. They're isolated sometimes for months at a time. And it's a very intimate contact that they have with the shepherd. And they're under his personal care and watchful eye every single day. The high country ranges present unique sets of problems. And it also presents unique sets of delights. The high country, many times storms can come, flash floods come along and through deep ravines and washes and this type of thing, and can wash the sheep away and can easily be swept away and drowned. Snake holes, wild predators, poisonous plants, avalanches, various things present problems that the sheep have, and of course that the shepherd has in trying to watch for it. David apparently was at one of these summer sheep ranges when Samuel was sent by God to anoint him as king over Israel. David was high up in the hills tending his father's sheep, and he knew firsthand the dangers, the difficulties, the delights that were there of the summer ranges. He knew and he understood this wild and wonderful country that he was in of the sheep ranges. He would not take the sheep to a range where he was not familiar with it. They walked over literally every square inch of it to make sure that it was safe for the sheep. Little took David or any of the shepherds by surprise. He managed the flock. He led his sheep. He protected his sheep. He was fully prepared to safeguard his flock. From the book, The Song of My Syrian Guest, it says, I often have roamed through the shepherd's country in my youth and have seen how hard it is to choose the right path for the sheep. One leads to a precipice, another to a place where the sheep cannot find the way back, and the shepherd was always going ahead, leading them in the right paths, proud of his good name as a shepherd. Some paths that are right paths will still lead to places that have deadly perils. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, is the way the psalm touches this fact in a shepherd's life. The way of naming the valley is very true in our country. I remember one near my home called the Valley of Robbers, and another the Ravine of Ravens. You see, the Valley of the Shadow of Death is a name drawn from my country's old custom. You know, in sheep under God's care, many times we have to go through, quote, the Valley of the Shadow of Death. And I hope that, like David said, you know, I will fear no evil, that nothing's going to get to me, that nothing's going to upset me, that no matter how dismal, no matter how rough, no matter how hard, no matter how disparaging the situation as we go through it, and yet we are to find solace in the comfort of our chief shepherd, Jesus Christ. It may seem difficult to, quote, get to the higher ground spiritually, but no matter how tough it is, we still have to go, and the end result is for our good. Interestingly enough, the best watering is in the valleys, and yet none of us like valleys in our life. We like the peaks, and we don't like to go down, you know, deep into the valleys and so forth. And sometimes you feel closed in and sort of claustrophobic and like you're surrounded by predators and so forth. But when God walks you through the hardships of this life, do we then look back and think about it and reflect on His faithfulness in every single case to deliver us from every crisis and problem that we've had in our life? Do you exude this powerful confidence in our great shepherd, in Jesus Christ and in God the Father, no matter what might happen, that when storms come, that no matter what trials we go through, when floods range, when predators are there about to chew us up, because the chief shepherd that loves you so much that we literally can walk through the valley of the shadow of death, and I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Point number 8, verse 4. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. From the song of my Syrian guest, thy rod and my staff, this is also true of life. A double expression covers the whole round of protective care. For it is the shepherds that carry a crook for guiding the sheep and a weapon suitable for defending them. The staff and the rod, one for aiding them in places of need along the peaceful ways, the other for defense in perils of robbers and wild beasts. This saying describes, as only a shepherd could, how much these words mean. Thou art with me. And what shall I say then to these next words? They comfort me. Ah, madam, you should see the sheep cuddle near the shepherd to understand that. The rod was used as a weapon. It was used to drive off predators. Through the years, the nickname Rod, somehow or the other, even came down through gangster time, and they called his gun a rod. And they actually think that that may have been handed down from the ancient days of the shepherds. When God worked through Moses, you remember that it was his rod that he used to perform the miracles. He touched the Nile and it became blood. He threw it down and it turned into a snake and so forth. When God, of course, performed many, many miracles to lead the children of Israel out of Egypt, and God expressed his great power and authority through the rod. The rod was comforting. It was consoling to the sheep. They knew that they were protected as long as the shepherd had the rod. And just like God's word and his law protects us and consoles us. A second dimension of the rod is discipline. When a sheep would wander over to a precipice, when it would wander over to eat a diseased or a poisonous plant, the shepherd would take the rod and he'd hurl it. He'd throw it at the sheep to drive him away from the danger. The third use was to examine and to count the sheep. Every night, they would do what is known as and referred to as passing under the rod. This was when the sheep were counted, to make sure every single one of them was counted for. They were looked over thoroughly and completely to find any wounds that they might have, any sores, any parasites, they picked up any ticks or anything along the way. It was a time when each of them received very personal, intimate attention and inspection from the shepherd. Because of their long, thick wool, it's not easy to detect a problem that they have on their skin. If they had some kind of disease or if they had some kind of wound, many times you can't see it because of that wool. So the shepherd would take his rod and he would use it sort of like a comb and separate the wool so that he could actually see down into the skin of the sheep to make sure that this sheep was healthy and didn't have problems that needed to be taken care of. And you know, God does the same thing with us. David said in Psalm 139 and verse 23 and 24, he said, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties. See if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." You know, you just don't pull the wool over God's eyes, so to speak. He examines each of us closely. He gets beyond the veneer. He gets beyond the simple smile or whatever that we might try to put a front on for other people. But God sees well beyond that, and he gets down into the nitty-gritty, not only to our skin, but deep inside of us to find out truly what we are like and whether or not we are well and whether or not we're whole inside. We can put on a front that all's well, but God looks and he probes and he searches and he knows what our state and our condition is. God permeates through the outer facade of the wool, so to speak. You know, wool is used in the Bible as a symbol of self-pride, self-assertion. It's used for self-life, self-centeredness, and self-will. We even use the term today, pulling the wool over somebody's eyes. In Ezekiel 47, I'm not going to turn there, it just says that the priests were not allowed to wear wool, and perhaps that was the reason why. They shall not clothe themselves. Also, he goes on to say, with anything that causes sweat. So I would be in major serious trouble being a priest. For those of you that are guests, by the way, I had a heat stroke several years ago, and I asked Steve Penny to come up and turn the fan on because anytime he gets about 60 or 65 or whatever, I start sweating. So anyway, then he goes through the shepherd's staff. This is considered the most personal of all of the shepherd's equipment. The shepherds use a unique tool that is not used in any other livestock management. They don't use it when they have hogs or horses or cattle or anything like that. Generally, it's a staff that has a crooked top so that he's able to reach down into a ravine and pull a sheep up that might have fallen or pull him out of the water if they got into this swift running water and so forth. He often uses this staff to lean on as he's watching his flock. He uses staff to draw the sheep close to him and close to himself. He uses it to guide and direct the sheep. He uses it to, again, to save the sheep from endangerment and so forth, to rescue them. Point number 9, Psalm 23 and verse 5. "Thou preparest the table before me in the presence of mine enemies." You know, some people have felt that the scene totally now changes from the shepherd to a home type of banquet scene, but not so. "Thou preparest the table before me in the presence of mine enemies." The word for table here used simply means something spread out, quote unquote. One of the Psalms quoted as saying, "Can God prepare a table in the wilderness?" And in olden times, a table in the Middle East country primarily was just they would lay out some type of skin or blanket, something like this, and that's where they ate their meals while they were out. And even to this day, the Arabs do much the same thing, a mat or a piece of skin or so forth that is spread out. That's the kind of table that would be thought of in a shepherd's life as he prepared his own meal and as he sat and watched to make sure that the sheep were being fed properly. This is exactly like what a shepherd prepares for his sheep. Along with finding water every single day, he has to search out and find good grazing ground and safe feeding places for the sheep. He, quote, prepares a table before them. In truth, it is nonetheless a table in his eyes because it's a spreading slope or grassy ground that he's giving to the sheep to eat. All the shepherd's skills and often heroic work are called for in this form of duty. It's done many a day in the presence of the sheep's enemies. There are many poisonous plants that he has to watch for in the grass. The shepherd must find them and to get rid of them so that the sheep do not eat them. The sheep will not eat many poisonous plants, but there are some that they'll just go right to. And one kind of poisonous grass in particular, one of the books brings out. And he said he read about a man that once lost 300 sheep by mistake by not keeping them away from this poisonous grass. He mentions that there are many snake holes in the ground, and unless the snakes are driven away, unless the shepherd goes through first and makes sure, you know, that the holes are empty, and he'll stick his rod and his staff down there and drive the snakes out or kill them, that the sheep will be going along and eating, and then all of a sudden, you know, they'll be eating, and this snake come up and grab them by the nose and many times poison them. So it's something that he has to watch very, very carefully. He mentioned that even mole holes, and many times these snakes will get in these mole holes and then have just a little opening where they can stick their head up and the sheep walk by, and again, they grab them by the nose because they've been startled or whatever. So the shepherd's job is to keep them safe and sound. And he has to use all of his skills and bravery. He can't be afraid of snakes. He can't be afraid of the bears or whatever. And isn't it a blessing, brethren, that we have Jesus Christ, who literally is not afraid of anything, that we have the good shepherd that goes before us to prepare the way for us. He knows what's good for us. He knows what is in our best interest. And he protects us. He watches over us. He protects us from predators and other dangers as he prepares a table for us. Point number 10, verse 5. Thou anointest my head with oil, my cup runneth over. From the song of our Syrian guest, but what about the anointing of the head with oil and the cup running over? Oh, there begins a beautiful picture at the end of the day. The psalm has sung of a whole round of the day's wanderings. All the needs of the sheep, all of the care of the shepherd, all of it closes with the last scene of the day. At the door of the sheepfold, the shepherd stands, and the rotting of the sheep takes place. The shepherd turns his body to let the sheep pass. He is the door, as Christ said of himself. With his rod, he holds back the sheep while he looks over them one by one as they go into the fold. He has a horn filled with olive oil, and he has cedar tar that he anoints a knee bruised on a rock or a side scratched by a thorn. And then he comes to one that's not bruised or simply, but is simply just worn out and exhausted. He bathes his face and his head with the refreshing olive oil. He takes a large two-handled cup and he dips it brimming full of water that he's brought just for that purpose. He lets the weary sheep drink. There is nothing finer in the psalm than this. God's care is not for the wounded only, but it is for those who are just plain worn out and weary. The anointing of the head with oil, my cup runneth over. And then when the day is done and all of the sheep are snug in the field, with contentment, what rest under the starry sky? Then comes the thought of the deepest repose and comfort. Actually, in this short writing, David takes us through an entire day, and actually, in reality, an entire year of a sheep's life. From the winter home, pasturing near the house itself, to the summer pasture lands, table lands, it shows all of the care, the protection, the work of a shepherd. During the summer months, the sheep are pestered by flies and ticks and nasal flies and deer flies and black flies and all of these things and gnats. And these pests can be so intense they actually drive some sheep insane. He used the example of this nose fly that I was not familiar with. But if you can imagine, this thing, this worm gets inside of their nose. And he said he has seen sheep literally run up against rocks and just butt their head and butt their head and butt their head until sometimes they will kill themselves because of this irritation in their nose that has these worms in there. And, you know, I can't even imagine. But the shepherd, of course, has to take care of them to make sure that they do not have that sort of thing. says there is also a contagious disease known as scab that can infect an entire flock. It is spread through contact one with another. The nose fly or nasal fly is especially annoying. They fly around the head of the sheep trying to deposit their eggs in the moist mucous membrane of the sheep's nose. And in a few days, the eggs hatch into smaller, slender-like larvae, and they work their way up the nasal passage into the sheep's head. It is so irritating the sheep that many times they will beat their heads against trees or rocks or posts or bush, and they stomp their feet and they toss their head, and they'll rub themselves in the dirt and fight violently to try to get rid of these pests. Sometimes the infection will be so bad that the sheep will run in a frenzy so that they cripple or blind themselves, and others, sometimes they even kill themselves. And a shepherd looks at Psalm 23, he said, only the strictest attention to the behavior of the sheep by the shepherd can forestall the difficulties of, quote, fly time. At the very first sign of flies among the flock, he will apply an ointment to their heads. I have always preferred to use a homemade remedy composed of linseed oil, sulfur, and tar, which was spread over the sheep's nose and head to protect it against nose flies. What an incredible transformation this would make among the sheep. Once the oil had been applied to the sheep's head, there was an immediate change in their behavior. None was aggressive. The aggression was gone. The frenzy, the irritability, and the restlessness was all disappeared. Instead, the sheep would start to feed quietly again, and they soon would lie down in peaceful contentment. And you know, sometimes we don't have things that bother us, maybe to that extent that we feel, and sometimes we do, I guess. Sometimes we have things that bother us so much we feel like just going over to a tree somewhere and just butting our head against it and beating our brains out. And it's as though God comes along and he puts this soothing ointment, his Holy Spirit, on us, and it just seems like things calm down and we begin to look at things totally different and we begin to understand. When trouble and disappointment comes along that we're apt to feel, sometimes forgotten by our shepherd, and we don't really see what he does in our life. We act as though he's fallen down on the job. In reality, he's never asleep. He's not like David or not like other shepherds. He's never lax or careless. He has perfect sight in the dark, whether daylight or dark. He's never indifferent to our well-being. He always is on the job, and he's always concerned for our best welfare and our benefit. No wonder that David wrote, my cup runneth over. Along with the good, sometimes, you know, we have things that bother us, and we have things that truly are not good, as it were. But along with the good, many times we have the bad that comes along. Violent storms in our life, many times unexpected blizzards come over all of our lives. Philip Keller brings out how he would carry a bottle of brandy during the wintertime that was mixed with water, and when a ewe or lamb was chilled, and he would just see it, and they literally sometimes just shake violently due to the overexposure to the wet and the cold and cold weather and the blowing winds and this type of thing. And he'd go over and he would give the ewe or the lamb a little bit of the shot of the whiskey, and in just a few spoonfuls of it, all of a sudden, you know, they'd feel that warmth go through them, and in a few moments, the lamb or the ewe would be jumping around and on his feet with renewed energy. It warmed a chilled body. And, you know, sometimes we need that from God. The shepherds of the Old Testament probably shared their brandy, probably shared their wine or whatever it might have been with the chilled and weakened sheep that they had in their care. And what a meaningful symbol that it is. Regarding the Passover, you know, it's the very next holy day that we have coming up as we stop and we think about Christ being our chief shepherd, as he being our master and the one who truly is in charge of our life. And he shares that cup of wine, picturing the cup of his suffering, of his blood, which he shed abroad for each and every one of us as he poured his life out so willingly for each of us. He's been through the storm before us. He was the captain of our salvation. He went that road, and he's borne our sorrows and our griefs, and he knows exactly what it's like. Point number 11, the final one, Psalm 23 and verse 6. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Throughout This sermon, this marvelous Psalm 1, I've tried to continually put emphasis on the care that Jesus Christ and that God the Father exercises over us. Just like any attentive sheepman or shepherd, that Jesus Christ watches over us, He knows exactly what's going on in your life. God is not blind to the trials and the tests and the traumas and the problems that you have. I've hopefully stressed how essential to the welfare of the sheep is the rancher's diligence and his effort and his labor. Now it's summed up by David in saying, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." The sheep of such a skilled, loving, kind, and gracious shepherd, hard-working shepherd like Jesus Christ, are truly blessed. Goodness and mercy always comes from the shepherd. There are so many times when a person's life, when that faith in the good shepherd is tested, when you're going through some rough storms, when you have truly trials and tests, and when the chips are down in your life, and life is more than just vain platitudes, but you truly then have faith in God and in Jesus Christ, that He is the chief shepherd over your life. When you hold the lifeless body of a loved one in your arms, when it seems your life falling apart, when it seems like, you know, you lose your job, your dream castle comes crashing around, down around you and so forth, can you honestly say, like David, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever"? That he had no desire to leave that sheepfold. That he had no desire to leave that good shepherd. That he always, no matter what trials and tests he and the entire flock faced, knew that that shepherd had tremendous love and concern for him. That's what's meant by saying the just shall live by faith. Can you see how over and over and over Christ has managed your life and has guided you by the still waters, waters of peace and stillness? How He has anointed you, warmed you, taken you up in His arms and loved you? How many dead-end canyons have you ever found yourself in, only to see all of a sudden that it just opens up miraculously to an entirely new pasture? You know, they say a sheep, and I don't know that this is true. It's hard for me to believe. They say you can put a sheep's head in the corner and they cannot get out, that a sheep has no ability to back up. Like I said, I don't know if that's true, but that's what they claim, that they cannot go in reverse, that they only know to go forward, that they cannot go backwards. And you can put his nose right in the corner of a room and he can't get out. He'll just stay there for hours and hours because he can't figure out how to get out. And sometimes we feel like we're boxed in a corner, don't we? And we don't know how to get out. And Christ comes along with His crook, and He pulls us, and He says, you know, this is the way. Walk you in it. And He pets us, and He checks us to make sure that everything is okay. But how many dead-end canyons have you been in only to see God's intervention for you? Sometimes we have a dumb and stupid notion that we can do it better on our own, that we can survive on our own and actually do better on our own apart from God. But God in His goodness and mercy and tenderness is always with you, always watched over you, and followed you. And despite of our doubting and misgivings about His management of our affairs, He picks you up and He bore you back again and again with great tenderness and great love and great compassion. I believe this psalm is talking about a very special kind of submission. I think it's talking about a depth of faith, a total surrender to the Master, the chief shepherd, that honestly few have truly ever experienced. If you have that depth of relationship with your chief shepherd, then truly you will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. In John 10 and verse 11, Christ said, "I am the good shepherd." The good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. Closing in Psalm 23 and verse 1. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the path of righteousness for His name's sake. Yea, though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for You are with me. Your rod and Your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. You anoint my head with oil, and my cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Next week.